Welcome back to the Hoop Talks podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Robson, alongside Sean Woodley. And Sean, they let us back in for a second week of podcasting. Can you believe it?
Yeah, because we were not terrible the first time around. I thought we went long. We went really long in the last one, but I thought we were like decent.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think we're people's like laundry soundtrack if you got to go down to the laundry room a couple times.
Yeah, we're like Seinfeld in that like the first season wasn't great, but it was like, well, maybe there's something here, so let's keep going with it. I don't think we're going to reach the heights that Seinfeld did, but hey, maybe we will.
Why don't limit us so easily? I mean, if we could ever get to a Seinfeld level, I'm fine with that.
That'd be all right.
Maybe a Curb spinoff too.
Yeah, yeah. Should we tell people about what's going on right now with the podcast?
Yeah, so this week we've added a whole new element to what we're doing. We are streaming live, little AM radio style streaming on Mixlr this morning. Sean hooked that up for us. So if you're in the car and have data, or if you're at home and on your Wi-Fi, give us a little live listen right now and tickle our fingers.
Yeah, we'll give you traffic and weather on the 10s and
sure.
Sports.
Maybe some news on the 7s.
Sports with some dude with a very sportsy voice and... That'll be it. We don't have sportsy voices, though.
Raiders beat the Chiefs last night on a last-second touchdown by Derek Carr.
The Raptors stop the Bulls. Yeah, no. We're not going to do that.
I love sports update guy.
It's my favorite genre broadcaster to like just laugh at. It's pretty good.
It's a dying medium, but I think it needs to be kept alive just for the jokes.
Do you want to tell me what we're doing today?
Yeah, I mean, I could. So
I don't know why I keep telling you to get back on track. You're the host.
I like you.
Do whatever the hell you want.
But you're the old guy here, so I mean, you just have to keep the pupil on track. I understand. So, folks, we've watched 3 days of NBA basketball, which is a really huge sample size. Wouldn't you agree, Sean?
It's enormous.
It's a massive. Yeah. It's basically a baseball season, essentially. So what we're going to do today is give you some takes on where we see this season going based on the enormous sample size of 3 days. One game for each team. We have takes at different levels. We have like some lukewarm room temperature water. We have a nice warm coffee. And then we have a piping hot tea for you.
Yeah. And some teams have two games, but by the way. So like we have real samples for those teams. So it's not all just like uninformed one game, one-off takes. We have two full games, 96 minutes of some teams.
Some people won't even watch that much basketball all year.
Apparently, if you listen to last week's podcast, I won't. So
yeah, I think you can tap out now. You can focus back on hockey and football for the rest of the year.
Give me some TFC, and I'm good.
Supporters Shield, baby.
The football is bad. It's not good.
Did you watch last night's game?
No, awesome. I was covering the beloved Toronto Raptors against the putrid Chicago Bulls, which are going to be involved in one of my takes. So that's a tease.
Well, there you go. I mean, if people aren't in here for Bulls talk, then what are they here for? All right, Sean, so why don't you get us started off with your first room temperature take of the day?
Okay, my first room temperature take is that the Philadelphia 76ers are going to be one of the three worst crunch time teams in the NBA. Everyone was pretty excited about their game against the Wizards on Wednesday. It was a 120-115 win for Washington, and it was like a really entertaining game. John Wall did some crazy stuff. Ben Simmons got out there and was like playing NBA basketball. Joel Embiid was doing Joel Embiid things. But I was like not all that sold on their late game offense, and I think there's some reasons for that. I think there's not like a go-to guy on the team right now that you can really trust. Like Joel Embiid is very, very good, but a lot of his shots, like he's not creating most of his shots. A lot of them are coming in sort of pick and roll situations or like in post-ups where he's kind of working out of that. And he's not exactly a guy you can just like say, okay, go get a bucket, Joel, because his handle's still a little bit loose. A couple turnovers he had in the last game sort of, you know, on like post-ups and things like that where his handle for a 7'2" guy, yeah, it's understandable that his handle's not quite there. And he's played 31 NBA games. Like, he's working on that. But I think you saw late in the game, there just wasn't a whole lot of order to the offense. And like Ben Simmons isn't a shooter. Markelle Fultz is going through a phase right now where I don't know what the hell's going on with his shot or his free throws. And there's just not a guy that you could count on, except for like maybe JJ Redick, to hit a shot late in the game. And like you don't want to really be drawing up plays for JJ Redick when you have all this other talent on the roster. So that's kind of where I'm at with the Sixers. So I think they're going to be one of the worst crunch time teams in the league, and that is why I think they're going to kind of go under what a lot of people are expecting in terms of their win total, because I think they'll be close in games, but I just don't know if they have anyone right now who you can count on to close games out.
I agree with you totally. I think that the Sixers are going to be the one of the better three-quarter teams in the NBA, but if a game is close going to the fourth, like you said, they really don't have that guard or someone with experience to go get that go-to bucket, and we all love watching Embiid play, but you're right. He's turnover-prone. He's going to average probably 5 or 6 a game, and you can't just chuck it to him on the perimeter and say, go in there and get a score if we need to. And, I mean, they have some vets coming off the bench, of course, like you said, with Redick in the starting lineup, and you can bring in some guys with NBA experience off the bench, but I mean, Jared Bayless really isn't striking fear into anybody. And with that being said, they're not really going to have that guy that you can even chuck it to for the three if you take Redick off, if you want to have some more defensive length or anything like that out on the floor. So I think without a true point guard and Simmons learning on the fly and Fultz trying to put it all together with the jump shot and what have you, they're really going to struggle late in games if it's close.
And look, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, they are going to learn. That's, you know, when you have those guys trying to, like, figure stuff out, that's eventually going to be good for them in the long term. But I think that's why you have to, like, be careful with young teams. We saw this with the Wolves the last couple years, too, where they would kill teams for the first three quarters and then just completely go to crap in the fourth quarter because no one could finish and no one could, you know, just be that guy you can count on late in games. And I think it's going to be the same deal with the Sixers, but, like, eventually all of the mistakes they make are going to end up being good for them. But, like, when Jared Bayless is leading your team in scoring in a fourth quarter, like, that's not a good thing. He was 4 of 5 in that game. He was 2 of 3 from deep. That's great in the fourth quarter. But, like, Simmons 1 for 4. Embiid only played 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. Redick was 1 for 3. You know, maybe Robert Covington's the guy. He was amazing in that game. And, God, he's just such a steal for, like, $1 million a year. But yeah, I think just it's the young team thing, and that's why I'm always kind of hesitant to just, like, pencil in young teams to be really good, because they lose games, you know, despite being competitive. Like, they lose games because they just don't have anyone who can finish. And, like, we talk all about this, like, motion offense and having, you know, an egalitarian approach and how that's so much better now, but you know, you still kind of have to have a guy you can count on. Like, that's every team has that kind of guy. Like, Kevin Durant can go ISO for the Warriors if they need him to. It's not often that they need him to, but, like, they have that in their tool bag, and I'm just not sure the Sixers have that just yet.
So are you trying to tell me that Kevin Durant is better than Joel Embiid?
I mean, I might get hurt by NBA Twitter by saying that, but yeah, I'm going to go there.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. We need like a bomb drop to put in right there, because I think you're really shocking some of the community.
What is your lukewarm take?
So my lukewarm take this morning is going to be that the Lakers, the Los Angeles Lakers, or the Los Angeles LeVars, if you prefer, are going to be the most covered and loved sub-20-win team in NBA history.
Ooh, sub-20.
Yes. I mean, if you watch last night, of course, the Clippers offense, I think we can agree on, is going to be pretty decent. But the defense remains an absolute disaster. And if every player in the league takes going at Lonzo Ball, even at half the level that Patrick Beverley destroyed him last night, I think there are going to be many long nights for Lonzo where he can't even get a shot off, let alone try to be a threat enough that players will double him or come to him so he can find open teammates. I mean, we heard all about the Lonzo effect in preseason, and it looked good at times, but last night, the Lakers had incredible problems trying to move the ball. And I mean, in that second half, it was just broke down. There were so many Brandon Ingram ISOs ending in terrible jump shots or just pushed up forces in the lane. I think they're really going to struggle to score. And we saw Lonzo bench for the entire fourth quarter because what he was doing was just not working against the defense the Clippers were putting out there.
Yeah, it's crazy that a team that has one good player in Brook Lopez and then, like, one truly exciting prospect in Lonzo and then a bunch of dudes who are kind of disappointing is bad. Like, there are people who are, like, projecting the Lakers to win, like, 35 games this year. And again, it's the young team thing. Like, just never believe in young teams. They suck. They're not good. They take time to figure out how to win in the NBA. It's not just, like, a thing because a guy's talented that he just figures it out right away. And, like, maybe it was an unfairly bad matchup for Lonzo to go up against Patrick Beverley in his first game when Patrick Beverley is literally an insane person, but, like, you're going to have to deal with him 4 times a year in that division, so, like, get used to it, I suppose. No, I'm kind of with you. Like, I don't know if sub-20, I don't know if I'll go there and agree with you in your lukewarm take, but I do think they're going to have a lot of issues scoring and a lot of issues defending. And when you have issues doing those two things, you are going to lose a lot of games. So, yeah, they're the Lakers are better in terms of trajectory than they were a year ago, maybe. I mean, D'Angelo Russell looked pretty good for the Nets, but I feel like Lonzo's going to figure it out. His passing's incredible, and he'll sort it out. But like a lot of the other guys in the team just aren't really all that encouraging, and to expect them to be anything more than like a 20-ish win team or a 25-win team at most, like, I think that's insane. And just look at the roster. Like, does anyone on the roster, like, really intrigue you as a guy who's going to be, like, an integral part of the next great Lakers team except for Lonzo?
No, honestly, at this point, it's hard. I mean, I don't want to write off Brandon Ingram right now, of course, because he still has all the physical tools, it looks like, to become a very good NBA player. I don't think he'll become a multiple-time All-Star, but just a solid starter who can average maybe 15 to 20 points a game and 5-6 rebounds. But the guys like Jordan Clarksons and Julius Randle, I really, like, those guys need to make that jump this year into being solid every night contributors. And you saw it last night again from Julius Randle, where as soon as the game got out of hand, the dude shut down. He stopped rebounding, he stopped defending, and wasn't really even trying on offense. So when you have guys like that that are just breaking down and their attitude sours when the team's going south, it's going to be really tough for this team to stay in games late and even make a run at some sort of a competitive record or a playoff seed.
Yeah, a friend of Raptors Twitter, Asad Alvi, tweeted last night that the Lakers make him sad. It's just a bunch of dudes who are going to be on first round out Eastern Conference teams in 5 years.
I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, like they're just not like Luol Deng's playing. Like he's starting. He played 13 minutes, so like who cares? But like just like give Kyle Kuzma more minutes, or I don't know, just let Brandon Ingram play 40 minutes and figure it out, because he needs to do some figuring out. And like if the Lakers have designs on like winning this season, I think that's stupid. I mean, they don't have their pick, so maybe they have no incentive to tank, but that like they should still be sort of like prioritizing development of young guys, I think, over anything else. And while I think Brooke Lopez is good, I think Brooke Lopez is like a prime candidate for like late in the season Tyson Chandler and Eric Bledsoe syndrome. Like but they're not trying to tank, and I don't think they really care where their pick goes, but like I feel like they just have to like try to get other guys in and try to get Julius Randle real minutes and try to, you know, develop these guys, because like, man, it's just, this is not a season for them to try to win. It's just kind of, it sucks that they don't have their pick, but like it still shouldn't come at the expense of developing guys, right?
I think so. And yeah, with the competitiveness of the West this season at an incredibly all-time high, there is zero rationale for them to try to win between 25 and 35 games, and you just need to embrace the tank at this point.
Yeah.
All right, Sean, now let's move on to your warm coffee take this morning. I hear the coffee pot brewing right now.
Well, I've already consumed the coffee, but it was good. It was warm. My warm take is that I think the Bulls are going to challenge the 76ers that went 10-72. I saw the Bulls in the flesh last night. They are just a disaster. I mean, two of their like three best players are out because they punched each other, or one of them punched another, which is just sad and depressing. And then like just the roster is just so bereft of anything. Like last night in the first quarter against the Raptors, Robin Lopez, like six straight possessions, was like the initiator of the Bulls offense. And guess what? It didn't go very well. Like you have like Quincy Pondexter. I really want Quincy Pondexter to do well, but he can't move anymore. And Zach LaVine's not back yet. And their point guards are Cameron Payne, Jaren Grant, Kay Felder, Ryan Arcidiacono, and Chris Dunn. Like Chris Dunn didn't even play last night. There's no talent on the team. I don't see how they're going to win. I was looking last night at the Charlotte Hornets roster from 2011-12, the team that went like 9-56 in that, or 9-57 in that shortened lockout season. And like, I don't really see the difference between this Bulls roster and that Hornets roster that had like young Kemba Walker, who wasn't good yet, but was better than any of the point guards they have on the team right now with the Bulls. And they had like Boris Diaw, who yes, was like 300 pounds, but like it was still Boris Diaw. And like Byron Mullins was on that team. Like he's comparable to like Denzel Valentine, probably. Like they're just not a good team. And I don't see any sort of reasons for optimism. Like Paul Zipser did a couple nice things, I suppose, but like it's Paul Zipser. Like what? there's no like projectable guys in this team that you think like by the end of the year I think are going to change people's minds about them. It's just a bunch of dudes who I think are just very, very bad at basketball, and they're going to win like 11 games. They're just so bad.
I totally agree with you. I was also in attendance last night, and when Ryan Arcidiacono, who, give it to him, amazing college point guard at Villanova, set up one of the most famous shots in NCAA history, of course, a couple years ago, but I did not think that dude would be playing in the NBA in 2017. I mean, you look at this bench, Cristiano Felicio, Ryan Arcidiacono, David Nwaba, Kay Felder, Quincy Pondexter, Antonio Blakely, and Denzel Valentine. Would that team even beat 905?
Who is Antonio Blakeney?
He was Ben Simmons' running mate, in quotation marks, at LSU.
I thought that was Tim Quarterman.
No, they were both on that underwhelming team.
Well, three NBA players, they should have been much better. I'm not sure Antonio Blakeney is an NBA player. Poor Antonio Blakeney got a three turned into a two last night as well to change the final score of the game.
That's extremely cruel.
Yeah, because the Bulls can't do anything right.
But he had a team-high plus five in his 1 minute of action shot. So I really don't know what there is to argue about.
Like, if you're looking at the Bulls, what is their like big three? If you're looking, I think you got to go
Justin Holiday.
Yeah,
Rolo and the young Buck Markkanen.
That is just Markkanen was okay last night, 17 and 8. He looks like he'd be pretty good, I think, but it's going to take time. And
definitely.
Yeah, there's no like Kay Felder like won the backup point guard job over Arcidiacono pretty quickly. It was like, oh, this guy can dribble crazy.
he looks like a guy that plays at your local YMCA and dominates by just pounding the ball and crossing dudes over.
I don't know who it was I saw last night said, I imagine how Kay Felder is exactly how Kevin Hart dribbles.
That was me.
Oh, that was you.
I'll take credit for that.
That was you. Okay, yeah. I'll defer to you that one. That made me chuckle. Like, he's not good.
No, I mean, it makes sense.
It's a running theme with this team. Not good. Like, isn't Denzel Valentine supposed to be, like, some sort of, like, savant passer? Wasn't that kind of the thing when he came out of school? Like, oh, this guy's just, like,
He was the next Draymond when he was playing at Michigan State.
With a big old 12 points and two boards and no assists and literally nothing else across the board. Like, good job there, Denzel.
Yeah. I think this
Justin Holiday should not be taking 16 shots.
Maybe he thinks he's Drew Holiday at this point.
And Drew Holiday should be taking 16 shots either. Just stand and watch the team devolve into nothing around you. I'm already out on the Pelicans, by the way.
Yeah, I knew you would be there after that loss to the diminished Grizzlies on Wednesday evening. Bad.
All right. Should we move on to your warm coffee take?
Sure. My warm coffee take is I sip my Starbucks K-Cup this morning. Call me bougie. Is going to be that the Jazz, yes, the Utah Jazz offense is better without Gordon Hayward.
This is a spicy one. I like it. What's your rationale behind it?
Well, watching one game against the defensively challenged Nuggets, I am going to have to believe that 20-3 run they put on in the third quarter is always going to be the standard for them. I think that without Gordon Hayward being that second go-to guy and them not having to be worried about we need to get Hayward touches, we also need to get Rudy touches so that he stays engaged on the defensive end because we know you have to keep your big men involved, they're going to be much more willing to move the basketball around. And with Donovan Mitchell, the rookie sensation, my fantasy steal of the year, starting at two guard besides Ricky Rubio, he's going to be just as willing to move the ball as Rubio, who I think that freed up from Thibodeau and Quinn Snyder, giving him that sort of freedom to pass the ball and kind of run the team that he hasn't had before. They're going to be trying to get everyone involved. And if the shooting can continue from the outside, from Burks and Hood and Joe Ingles even, they can really have a chance to break free and have a freer flowing kind of offense.
Yeah, their offense last year was like, I mean, it's going to be the same thing this year because they don't really have many creators, but it was like, pass it around for 20 seconds and hope you can find a good shot from that. It's probably going to be similar. Like I said, there's not that many great creators, but like maybe Ricky Rubio's passing opens up some things a little bit more and they can kind of get into their stuff a little faster and find shots earlier in the shot clock. I don't know if the Jazz offense is going to be better than it was with Hayward, but I do think the Jazz have a chance to be like just as good as they were because their defense is amazing. That Denver team should be much better on offense, and they held them to 96 points and 13 points in the fourth quarter. And I think that Utah defense is going to end up being like number one in the league. I like the Spurs and Warriors are always up there, but the Utah defense is so oppressive, and like Rudy Gobert is so ridiculous at the rim that I just, and like Ricky Rubio is so much better at the point of attack. I mean, George Hill is really good too, so I shouldn't sell him short, but he barely played last year after the start of the season when he was amazing. So the defense is so oppressive that even if their offense isn't quite great, like they're going to win a lot of games like 95-80. And I think that's cool. That's fun. Honestly, the way you were going about your take, I wasn't even sure if you believed it, because the way you were...
I was kind of talking myself into it as we got there.
Okay. The tone to it was very Skip Bayless-y. It's like, I'm saying these words. I don't think I actually believe them, but I'm going to make you think I do.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you're right with the defense. It's definitely going to be what makes them go. I mean, you've got so much length with the wings on this team, with at least Rubio at point guard, who's a bigger point guard and can step up on defense. Donovan Mitchell's got a crazy wingspan. Yeah. You've got Burks and Hood coming off the bench, along with Thabo Sefolosha, whatever he's got left in the tank. And I mean, Quinn Snyder unlocked Ekpe Udo, right? I mean, yeah. He's been gone for 4 years, and he was a plus 24 in 13 minutes and hit a couple put-back dunks and was active on the defensive end, three blocks as well. So, I mean, if he's got role players like that making a huge impact on the defensive end, this team can definitely get to upper 40s in wins.
Yeah, they're going to be they're like a nice fun zig to the rest of the league zag, and I'm here for it. Defense is fun, especially like insanely good defense. Like, bring me back to the mid-2000s with like the Pistons. I mean, at the time it was disgusting, but that's what every team was. I'm okay going back and like having like a retro team that kind of embodies those mid-2000s teams that made the NBA barely watchable.
I know that's what you live for.
Yeah, absolutely. Should we move on to the scorching takes?
Yes, I want your piping hot, roof of the mouth burned, you gotta run to the bathroom and get cold water on it take.
All right, after watching one game, I don't think the Denver Nuggets are making the playoffs.
Woo! All of Twitter is about to just get in your mentions.
Here's the thing. I say that, and that's barring a trade of some sort. Like, if they trade for any competent point guard, then maybe, yeah, like, they have a shot because the rest of the roster is pretty good. But, like, the whole thing in the NBA right now is about having lots of wings who can kind of be interchangeable and lots of guards who can handle the ball and shoot. And the Nuggets don't really have any of those things. Like, they have three power forward types in their... Nikola Jokic is a center, but, like, Paul Millsap and Wilson Chandler are both power forwards, ideally. And then you have off the bench, like, Kenneth Faried, like, barely played the last game. You got Juan Hernan Gomez, who probably should be playing. They got Trey Lyles, and Darrell Arthur didn't even play. And Mason Plumlee, who they're paying a ton of money, who's also a big. Like, they have, like, seven or eight bigs, and the wing core on this team is just so thin. It's, like, Will Barton and Gary Harris, and, like, Will Barton's good, and Gary Harris is good, but it's only so much you can do with two wings. Like, the best teams in the league have, like, six or seven wings they can rely on. They have as many wings as the Nuggets have bigs. And their roster is just so unbalanced to me. And you have Emmanuel Mudiay and Jamal Murray, who I think Jamal Murray is going to be pretty good, but he's clearly not ready to be like a starting point guard in the NBA. And especially on a team with some expectations. And then Malik Beasley barely played. Like, he doesn't look like he's really going to be a part of it. And they just the roster is so out of whack, and they need to make a trade. They need to trade like three bigs for one point guard. Maybe bring back Jameer Nelson. I don't know. Why am I saying a team should bring back Jameer Nelson in 2017? That's how bad it is at their point guard spot. And I don't think that you can win in the NBA right now without a good point guard and without a bunch of wings. And the Nuggets don't have either of those things. They're really fun. They're an interesting thought experiment with Millsap and Jokic. And like, their offense will still probably be pretty good, but their defense is terrible. And they don't have a way to get better because all of their guys are big and slow and can't defend. So yeah, the Nuggets aren't making the playoffs unless they make a trade for like Mike Conley. So that's my mouth burner.
I can't disagree with your roster point right there. I mean, I'm just pulling up the box score right now, and you've got Faried, Lyles, Hernan Gomez, like you said, along with Plumlee. You don't need all those guys on one team. There's just nowhere for them to play.
Yeah.
And I mean,
there's been talk of Hernan Gomez playing small forward. We've seen like dudes who are supposed to be centers play small forward in the past. In
Andrea Bargnani,
yeah.
07.
That doesn't work. Like, especially that's 07. This is 2017. Like, you have to have speed, you have to have switchability. You can't have dudes who are lumbering playing the three. It's ridiculous.
Definitely. And I mean, I feel for Emmanuel Mudiay, I was really high on him coming out of school, but I don't think he really factors into a team's plans, barring a massive leap or a change in maybe coaching to unlock some part of his game to become a starting point guard. And I always thought Jamal Murray profiled as more of a two than a one, because the dude's a lights out shooter. But in college, at his 1 year at Kentucky, he never got dudes involved. And I mean, he played some point guard last year, but he's definitely not ready to run a team. Mm-hmm. And you bring up the wing point. It looks like if Richard Jefferson does end up going there, he's going to end up playing maybe high 20s in minutes, just because they're so barefoot of another wing on that roster. They're going to need Richard Jefferson to be a real contributor.
Barefoot?
I meant to say bereft, but you know what? I'm trying to be a little too fancy this barefoot. Morning. Yeah, okay. You know, we'll go with it. Sure. But yeah, I think
that sounds like a brand of like compression, like bodysuit that you would run in. Makes you feel naked, but you run in it, kind of thing. Like,
look at that. It. Someone can trademark that and make a lot of money off me now.
There you go.
So yeah, I mean, if Richard Jefferson ends up being the second or third wing on this team, you definitely will not be out of this world for saying they don't make the playoffs.
There's a lot of good teams in the West, and it's going to come down to which flaws are the most fatal. And I feel like the biggest flaw you can have is not having good guard play, and then not having a bunch of wings who can play defense and shoot threes. And like, I like Wilson Chandler a lot. He's not a three anymore. He's a four. Like, he's a four in today's NBA. And there's just only so many spots and minutes for guys. I don't know. They're not maximizing the number of young bigs they have on the team. Like, Trey Lyles can play. Hernan Gomez can play. Even, like, Fareed can do some stuff once in a while, even though I'm not a huge Fareed fan. And, like, Plumlee can do stuff, too. But they're not maximizing those guys because there aren't enough spots for them to play. And they're also not maximizing the rest of the roster because they just don't have anybody on the team to maximize it. So, like, Gary Harris has to be incredible this season. And he was pretty good in the opener, 5-7 from the field, 3-3 from deep, 14 points. Like, that's good, but there's just not enough guys like Gary Harris on this team, and that's going to kill them, I think. You have to have good guards, and they just don't have any.
Totally. I can't disagree with you on that one. So, for my piping hot take of the day, we'll move back to the East Coast. And now, I almost want to say I feel bad for Celtics fans, because you've lost Gordon Hayward for the season. You gutted your team's depth to clear the space to get him and Kyrie Irving.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't actually feel bad for Celtics fans just because of the arrogance. I mean, all the best to Gordon. I hope he heals. Never want to see a career derailed by injuries. And he's a great player, good guy to have in the league. But my take is the Celtics are going to finish fourth in the East or lower. Am I crazy?
That's like, wait, you think they're going to finish at like fourth or? I'm confused.
I think
explain
the
this take.
I think the
Celtics, they're going to be a top four team.
I think they're going to finish either fourth or lower in the conference. They are not going to crack the top three.
Well, that's not a hot take without Gordon Hayward.
Don't think so?
No.
Really?
No, that's not a hot take at all.
The Kyrie love knows no bounds.
Yeah, this is like the most lukewarm take ever. You have totally ruined the premise of this podcast.
Wow, okay, what do you want me to say? They're going to finish 7 or 8?
Yeah, that would be the hot take.
I could go.
Gonna, like,
I could go.
Fight
I can,
for a playoff spot.
I can
I
make
think,
an,
Yeah.
I can make an argument they finished 7th or 8th, because if you look at this bench that they played against the Bucks in that loss on Wednesday night, Semi Ojeleye, Daniel Tice, Abdul Nader, Aaron Baines, Terry Rozier. Three of those guys are D-League guys. I think we can agree with that. Aaron Baines is nothing more than a goon and an enforcer. And although Terry Rozier is like the A1
trade
value.
He's actually good now.
Yeah. I mean, Terry Rozier's a good player, but Danny Ainge holds him as his savior. I think without that second gun, we're going to see maybe a glowed up version of Kyrie Irving's last go it alone Cavaliers teams.
Yeah, I also think that I think Jaylen Brown's probably going to be pretty good. I think expecting Jason Tatum to do what he did in the opener all the time is a little insane. Marcus
totally.
Morris
I mean,
still
we saw that he was only 3-7, didn't really have a big impact.
Yeah. But then, yeah, like after those guys, and you're relying on those guys to be as good as they were in the opener all season long, which is probably dangerous, there isn't much. And yeah, Kyrie as the main guy in a team, we've seen it doesn't really work. The Cavs were horrible when he was in without LeBron over the course of LeBron's time with him. And they're also missing Gordon Hayward, who is their biggest and best defensive wing as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Marcus Smart's great at defense, but he's kind of small. And he can kind of guard up in size a little bit, but it's only so much you can do with switching and stuff when you don't have Gordon Hayward out there. Like, he's so important to what they were going to do on both ends of the floor. And so I wouldn't be shocked if they missed the playoffs. I think,
Really? In the East, even?
Okay, maybe I would be, just because I think Stevens would probably coach them up a little bit. But one more injury, they're kind of screwed. Like, if they lose any of their big men, they're absolutely screwed. Their defense, I think, is going to be really bad. Like, their offense is still probably going to be fine. They got enough guys. Like, Kyrie can create enough, and if he's, like, committed to creating for other guys, like, maybe they're fine, and maybe it can be, like, a top 10 offense still. But I think the defense is going to be bottom 10, and that isn't a great recipe for success. It sucks. Like, I wanted to see this team playing at full strength with Gordon Hayward, as much as, like, we're Celtics haters in Toronto or whatever, but, like, I wanted to see them play really well together, and I wanted to see what they could do, because it was an interesting mix of players. And now they just, the season is kind of lost for that, and that sucks a lot. But I think the loss of Hayward, like, Hayward is their best player. I don't think, like, is that a hot take? I don't know. Is that a
I think it depends. I mean, Gordon Hayward's kind of the do-it-all guy, where Kyrie is more specifically just a scorer and a creator.
Yeah. But so, yeah, Hayward's the better player.
Yeah, you can't. You could make an argument for both, definitely.
Like, I think if they had lost Kyrie, they'd be able to weather it more than if they had lost Hayward, because Hayward does more for them, I think.
For
and,
sure.
Like, Kyrie has, like, notable flaws that I think are going to be amplified by the fact that Hayward's not there, too. So, I don't know, man. It sucks. It's just a bummer overall. Like, injuries suck. Jeremy Lin, we're going to get to Jeremy Lin in a second. That also is terrible. Injury. I guess last night we went a night without having a horrible season-ending injury, so that's
knock on wood.
A positive, I suppose. But yeah, it's. I'm looking at the pictures of the Celtics players right now. Gershon Yabusele is a massive human.
Yeah, he's a dancing bear.
Is he gonna play now? Is he gonna play now?
He was a DNP, but I think he might. I mean, is Nader really gonna stay up for the whole season?
Well, yeah, Yabusele is like their. Is it Yabusele or Yabusele?
I think it's Yabusele.
Okay, Yabusele. Just big Gersh. like, he's what? Like, their third big?
Yeah, I mean, if you consider Semi Ojeleye a big, he's just kind of a wing.
Yeah.
Kind of interchangeable guys. I mean, they're starting Jaylen Brown basically as a four right now.
Yeah. I like Jaylen Brown, man. He's good.
I think he's really going to develop and become this Hayward injury, as bad as it is really going to open the door for him to become a legitimate starting player in the NBA.
Yeah, that's the worrisome thing about the long-term sort of trajectory of the Celtics now without Hayward, is that, like, instead of having Hayward to kind of soak up the issues of the other guys in the team, like, they are going to have to just live through Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown making mistakes, and that's probably going to hurt them this season. But in the long term, like, they're going to accelerate their development that way, and that's probably a dangerous thing for 2018-19 and beyond for the Celtics. Like, that's going to be... I think a nice important step, because the early years of development are very important. We are seeing with, like, Andrew Wiggins, like, he had three different coaches in three different years, and the development can be stunted a little bit if you don't have the proper situation. And this feels like a situation where Brown and Tatum are really going to develop, and that's kind of terrifying for when Hayward does come back eventually.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that can replicate real live reps as a starter for these guys that aren't going to get pulled now when it comes to crunch time. And I think that down the road, definitely in 2 or 3 years, and even if LeBron leaves the conference, look out for the Celtics. Celtics. As sad as that is to say.
Everything comes up Celtics at this point.
Of course. We turned a negative Celtics segment into look at the Celtics go. What are we doing?
And then we have the whole Lakers being terrible thing. Their pick goes to the Celtics, right?
I believe so. If it falls between 2 and 5?
Yeah, okay, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to fall between 2 and 5.
Let's hope the Suns win a couple more games.
The Suns are just we'll get to this. I'm sure we'll have to watch the Suns at some point.
At some point, yes.
Watch of the week. Look at that segue.
Incredible. So, moving on to the hate watch of the week, which... kind of a great twist of fate here. The loyal fans voted for us to watch Nets Pacers on Wednesday night, which when you first looked at it, I thought, wow, this is going to be a 95-83 game. Just a lot of missed shots. But it ended up being the track meet possibly of the year. Yeah. 140 to 131.
How many teams scored 140 points last season? Couldn't have been many.
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, what was the league average last year? Probably about 105?
Yeah, I think I don't even know if the Warriors got to 140 at any point last season. Like, they would score 70 in halves all the time, but I don't think they ever got to 140.
Yeah, I mean, it was honestly such a balanced attack. I mean, if you go through the box score right now, all starters had double digits. Even Darren Collison had 21 points.
Yeah. My favorite part was looking at the box score like midway through the third quarter, and everyone on the Nets had like everyone on the Pacers had like double digit points, and then Corey Joseph was just sitting there with like 6 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists. Like classic Corey Joseph.
Nothing very has changed.
Yeah. I bet it was a very solid 6-2-3 though.
It was. I mean,
extremely solid.
I did have them on
layups.
I have to admit, I had them on as the second screen because I didn't want to miss the Sixer debut and all of its hoopla. But Corey Joe could have had a much bigger game. He was out there with Lance for a lot of his minutes, and Lance finished 6 of 19. And I think almost all of those misses came off Corey Joe passes. But, yeah, it was a great game besides, of course, like you mentioned, Jeremy Lin tearing that patellar tendon and just a cruel twist of fate. He's already lost a lot to injuries over his career, and it's sad to see him go.
Yeah, it's a bummer. In terms of like good things from this game, I think D'Angelo Russell looked really good. He had 30 points, 12 of 22, 4 of 8 from deep, 5 assists as well, led the team. Like here's the thing. Sam Presti's definitely going to win Executive of the Year for getting Carmelo and Paul George for nothing. Mm-hmm. But if D'Angelo Russell looks even like 75% of what he looked like in the opener, like that is like Sean Marks should get Executive of the Year votes because he got D'Angelo Russell for nothing.
Definitely.
Like that's a win for him, like a huge win for the Nets. And yeah, elsewhere on the roster, like it's not great. My favorite part of watching this game was the amazing Nets broadcast again, because man, it's so good with Ian Eagle, Sarah Kustak, and Michael Grady. But yeah, other than that, there's not a ton to like be happy about. Alan Crabb had a nice dunk. That was cool. He went baseline.
Did you see any of Rondae Hollis Jefferson? Did you watch him? I was watching at one point, I think it was in the second quarter, where he took a couple of jump shots, and I'm not sure whether he revamped it over the summer, but it looks a lot smoother. And he also went 8 of 8 from the foul line, which has gotta be a career high for him. So I think if he becomes even a passable shooter, that's a big weapon for him, for the Nets, excuse me, with his defense that he brings.
Man, I was so high on Rondae when he came out of the draft. I think the shooting, I mean, he didn't even attempt a three in this game, so let's hold
baby
the horses,
steps,
I think,
baby
a little
steps.
Bit. Yeah, but probably someone who shouldn't have attempted a three was Damari Carroll. Did you have takes on Damari Carroll's game?
You know what? Like, looking back at the numbers now, it's pretty poor. 4 of 12, 1 of 5 from beyond the arc. But I was watching him, and he at least didn't look like he was broken down.
Yeah.
Which is all right. He looked like he was able to run around. He had 10 points, 9 boards. A steal. He's not going to be great, obviously, but as a placeholder starter on that team, it's good to just see him back. I mean, Raptor fans will probably not be happy because of the comments on the way out, but I think he was just overly frustrated with himself more than anything and kind of took that out on the team and the way the system didn't fit his game. But if he can get back to being a good rotation NBA player, that's great for him because that knee injury really derailed what looked to be a promising arc of his career with that last year in Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably unfair sort of getting this two legs Miles thing off the ground as a, pretty much a direct slight
that
against Damari Carroll. But, I mean, it's nice to have a small forward on the Raptors who has two legs. It's great. But, yeah, like, I want to see Carroll be successful. He's a good dude. He's gone through a lot in his life. Like, I don't wish any ill upon the guy. It's just fun to make fun of the fact that he couldn't walk for 2 years, I suppose.
Very fair.
Anyone else in the Nets that you thought was, like, interesting? I thought Caris LeVert, he did have, like, a bad stat line, but... he looks like a dude who is like talented and can kind of create space for himself. So I'm down. And he's got a nice new haircut. So I think Caris LeVert is like maybe like their most exciting prospect outside of Russell.
Oh, definitely. He's a great scorer, and I think he's going to be able to create for himself and with more reps become a go-to guy if it's a six-man kind of role or even if he gets himself into that starting lineup. I also think that Trevor Booker could be a prime trade candidate to a contender.
He was last year, too. Like, I remember there was some talk about the Raptors, like, not the Raptors themselves leaking it or anything, but, like, there was some people saying, like, hey, maybe the Raptors should try to go for Trevor Booker, who's, like, Amir Johnson 2.0, I think. So I think that would probably play pretty well here. But, yeah, he makes, like, what, $6 million a year, $10 million a year?
Yeah, and I mean, he'll do the dirty work for you. He'll crash the offensive glass. He had 6 offensive rebounds, so, I mean... Depending on what the Raptors do with their philosophy this year, I was impressed last night, this kind of off topic, but the offensive rebounding from the bigs, the backups, like Poeltl was in there crashing a lot, and same with Ibaka and Valanciunas even had a couple times where they stay down there and battle in the offensive glass. So if they have a commitment to that, I wouldn't mind seeing Booker come across the border.
Yeah, the Raptors can't really make any trades at this point with their...
Let me dream.
With their cap sheet, but in terms of dreams being lived out, Damian Wilkins!
Yes,
still in the
back!
NBA. Two points, 11 minutes, at age 47. Classic guy that you would pick up on free agency in NBA Live 2005.
Great.
Damian Wilkins.
Great cheap great points off the bench.
Yep. Also, Domantas Sabonis looked not terrible. 7 of 7, 16 points, 7 boards. He was he had a couple of nice dunks, too. Like, he looked smooth and not, like, a complete waste of a trade for
the
Pacers.
Yeah, I think that's all right. And with Oladipo's line, he had a great game scoring on the in the first half, kind of quieted down the second half. But 4 assists, 5 boards, 4 steals, too. I think the Pacers won the Paul George trade.
Absolutely. Paul George last night with, like, 22 and 6. Like,
yeah. Nothing. Blown out of the water, 38 for Oladipo Sabonis.
Here's a
Sadipo. Is that their couple's name?
Oh, no. There's enough like similar syllables in those two names that you could come up with something much better than that, and I'm super disappointed in you right now.
It's early, all right?
Yeah. Here's another take for you. Miles Turner is going to be an all-star.
I can't disagree with that.
Dude, he's good.
He's
like,
great.
On the roll, he looked unstoppable. Only 1 of 3 from deep, but like 8 of 13 shooting, 14 boards, 4 blocks, like... Oh, I'm all in on Miles Turner, man. I think in the Eastern Conference, especially with Hayward now out, like that's another All-Star spot that's opening up.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Like that's gonna be. I think Turner's gonna be right. I mean, maybe the Pacers would be too crappy to. I mean, if they score 140 points every night, maybe not, but I think they're gonna be probably. They might be too crappy to have an All-Star, but Turner might be like the classic Chris Bosh, like. That era of the Raptors, like the Raptors weren't so great, but Chris Bosh was an all-star every year. I could see Miles Turner kind of getting into that range. He's really good.
Definitely.
He's like the natural evolution of Chris Bosh, I think.
I like that. I think it's probably kind of following the same development path. I was too young to really remember what Bosh was like in his earlier years, but Turner already kind of has that defensive presence and that physicality inside with the 4 blocks and him being a rim protector.
Face-up game too, man. The face-up game is nice.
Yeah, I think he's going to become a great shooter, and they're obviously going to feature him as much as possible. So at least Nate McMillan is not going to hide away from Turner, and he's going to get all the reps he needs to become one of the most dominant centers in the league right now.
For sure. Do you want to get into what our next week's Hate Watch is going to be?
Sure. Now, we sent out the poll last night, and I was really hoping it wasn't going to be what it is. Sean,
I'm sorry I put this in the poll, to be honest.
That's your fault. I will put all the blame on you.
Should have known. Okay, so the games I put in, I didn't put, there's a couple bad Pacers and Nets games, but I didn't put them in because we're not going to watch the same teams back-to-back weeks, hopefully, ideally. So the four games I put in, Sacramento-Phoenix on Monday. I think probably the Kings' performance against the Rockets ruled them out of being unwatchable. It's not a surprise.
They're a fun roster, even if they're not winning. I think there's enough dudes on that team that I enjoy watching as individuals that coming together would be fun.
De'Aaron Fox running a break with Vince Carter is some magical shit, man.
Bridging the gap of generations.
Yeah. The next game I put up was Knicks and Celtics. I thought maybe because the Celtics are without Hayward, maybe people might vote for this one. Nope, they got 3% of the vote, so we're not watching that. The next game is Memphis-Dallas, which is just kind of a blah game between two blah West teams. Only got 16% of the vote. So that leaves 68% of the vote left over for the game we're going to be watching for next week's Hate Watch of the Week. Atlanta-Chicago Thursday night.
How lovely. I get to watch the Bulls on a Thursday night, and it's not even the TNT Bulls.
No. They don't have a TNT game this year.
I think that's why we can be assured the Bulls somehow won't pull an 8 seed out of their ass, is the fact that they have been pulled off national TV where magical things happen. So while the Bucks and Celtics go at it again on TNT and my son Giannis scores 45, I will be watching Justin Holiday get D'd up by Taurean Prince.
That sounds... I wonder how long before we give up on this segment.
You know what? I don't think we can write it off yet. We already wrote off Nets-Pacers before watching a second of basketball, and that ended up being a very fun game. So
maybe this will be a thing where the game that we pick ends up being amazing every time.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Lauri Markkanen drops 40.
That would be nice. I'm not sure the Bulls or the Hawks are capable of scoring 140 points combined, so we'll see. But yeah, I'm hopeful that this will be like a boost that, like, maybe it's not a TNT game, but it is a Hoop Talks Live Hate Watch of the Week game. So
I think that's pretty close.
To, yeah. prove the haters wrong and that it's not a hate watch, because they definitely all listen to this show.
Those ratings will definitely spike now that the people know.
The two listeners, the two
them.
Live, the three live listeners we have right now are Dennis Schroeder, Miles Turner coming in, tuning in to listen to feel vindicated, and Paul Zipser. So what's up, guys? How's it going?
I've been reading some reports and rumors on the various sites that post these things that Dennis Schroeder might get traded this season, and if that happens, please never put the Hawks on this segment again.
Who's trading for Dennis Schroeder? I don't really get it.
I don't know either, but say the Nuggets are extremely desperate. Maybe they make an offer the Hawks can't refuse.
Maybe, yeah. Oh, God. No! Don't put Schroeder on the Nuggets. That's sullying such a fun team that is flawed, but don't put Schroeder on the Nuggets, man. That's not how you solve your guard problem.
I've just presented you with a doomsday scenario to close today's show.
Well, thanks for that. Either way, this was fun.
This was fun.
This is like half as long as the last episode.
I was going to say, we kept it under an hour, so people won't hate us.
And it was live with like three listeners. Hi, listeners.
Yeah, I mean, tell your friends. It can become a new morning ritual. You sit down with your coffee and listen to a couple idiots drink their coffee and talk about some bad NBA teams.
I'm down for this. This is good. We're not always going to talk about bad NBA teams. We'll come up with different ways to go about each show over the course of the season, when maybe we'll talk about good teams once in a while instead of the Nuggets or the Bulls. But I'm just slandering the Nuggets too much now, I think.
Yeah, you are super anti-Nuggets after today.
HP Basketball is coming for me. hi, Matt. He's not listening.
Never write yourself off. Well, I will close it by saying thanks to our live listeners, and for the people that are going to get this show later, make sure you log on to Audio Boom or wherever you get your podcasts. Am I right, Sean? It's at websites all over the interwebs.
Yeah, definitely on iTunes. We try to do Google Play. I think it might just be on Google Play anyway, because it just like osmosis is its way to it. That's a word.
Sure. Science, grade 8.
Pod Catcher, Pod Basket, Pod Bucket. I don't know if those are real things, I'm sure the podcast would be on there if they're real.
Awesome. Well, be sure to give us a download. Tweet to us. @_MitchRobson, @WoodleySean, @HoopTalksLive, if you want to be all official. Send in some teams that you want us to talk about or some segments. We'll try to incorporate them next week on the Hoop Talks podcast. Thanks for listening.